I will call the remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. Today is February 8th, 2022. This meeting is held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. The clerk will take attendance by roll.
Representative Hansen is here. Vice Chair Wasilek?
Wasilek, present.
Lead Heinzman, Josh?
Present.
Acomb, Patty? Ackland, Susan?
Ackland, present.
Backer, Jeff?
Backer here.
Becker, Finn, Jamie?
Becker, Finn, present.
Eklund, Rob?
Eklund, present.
Fisher, Peter?
Fisher, present.
Representative Green is excused. Igo, Spencer?
Igo, present.
Jordan, Sydney?
Jordan, present.
Keeler, Heather?
Keeler, present.
Lee, Fu?
Lee, present.
Lippert, Todd?
Lippert, present.
Lewick, Dale?
Lewick, present.
Morrison, Kelly?
Morrison, present.
Nelson, Nathan?
Nelson, present.
Tice, Tama?
Tice, present.
And Acomb, Patty?
Acomb, present.
We have a quorum.
We have a quorum. Thank you. Representative Lewick, would you like to move the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move the minutes.
Representative Lewick moves the minutes for February 3rd, 2022. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's a close vote, but the ayes have it, Representative Lewick. Members, we have three bills and a report we're going to be hearing today. The first bill up is House File 2854 from Chair Sundin.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm here today to present House File 2854. This is the local road wetland replacement bill for consideration in the omnibus finance bill. The bill provides a one-time $10 million general fund appropriation to the Board of Water and Soil Resources to make sure the agency has enough wetland credits in the bank to satisfy local road wetland impacts during the construction season. The state assumed responsibility for mitigating local road wetland impacts as a condition of the Wetland Conservation Act reform back in 1996, but funding the program has never been put into Bowser's base. Inadequate and inconsistent funding in the last decade has led to an annual end of session scramble to fund the program and a near total depletion of readily available wetland credits. This bill funds the program for another year, and I'll ask for your support, but the real solution is to recognize this program as a state responsibility and to make sure local road wetland replacement is a baseline item in Bowser's budget. This bill is supported by all of the county organizations and who provided a joint letter for you, you should have in your packet. To testify in support of the bill, I have Anoka County Engineer Joe McPherson on tap for the pleasure of the committee.
Thank you, Chair Sundin. I will move that House File 2854 be recommended to be re-referred to the Capital Investment Committee. And Chair Sundin, I believe you have an author's amendment. And since you're not a member of the committee, I would ask Representative Eklund to move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape you would like and then explain it briefly. Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the A1 amendment.
Representative Sundin, would you like to describe the amendment?
I'd rather have Representative Eklund, Chair Eklund, do that. I don't have it in front of me at this point.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Sundin mentioned it in his testimony. My amendment just simply moves that $10 million into the base so that we don't have to argue about where we're going to find the money every year. Every year that I've been a legislator, it doesn't matter who's in the majority or who's in the minority, there's some kind of fight about this $10 million. And with the transportation bill that's recently passed Congress, there's going to be significant transportation funding being spent in the state of Minnesota. I would certainly hate to see us run out of the wetland credit needs that we have while we're trying to figure out how to make this new transportation money be spent properly. So that is why I'm asking the committee to consider this amendment, Mr. Chair.
Members, are there any questions? I believe our precedent has been for author's amendments. We've done voice votes, if I remember correctly. I would support the amendment. That does not guarantee that it would be in the base, but I think by adopting this amendment, it shows that we believe it should be in the base. We do not know what targets are going to be or what the long run budget resolutions are going to be this session, but I think it's important to show that there's the support there. In addition, with the infrastructure bill, with a lot of road building and projects, I think we need to make sure we have wetland mitigation dollars when we're no longer in session as construction occurs. So I'll ask for a voice vote. Representative Heintzman, are you okay with that as doing voice votes on that author's amendment?
Yeah, that's the tradition in this committee, so I don't have any issue with that whatsoever.
All those, any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Those nay? Yeah, ayes have it. Motion is adopted. Representative Sundin, to the bill as amended with your testifier.
Yeah, I'd like to first thank Chair Hansen and Chair Eklund for the, particularly for that amendment. That's long overdue. So if you could move on to Anoka County Engineer Joe McPherson, that'd be terrific.
Mr. McPherson, welcome, and state your name for the record.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joe McPherson, and I am the County Engineer and Transportation Division Manager for Anoka County. I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you today, and on behalf of the Minnesota County Engineers Association, along with several of our member organizations throughout the state of Minnesota, we definitely support the actions that you're taking today. The local wetland replacement program is detrimental to us delivering our programs around the state. And being Anoka County, we see the best and worst of both worlds, right? We see the rural atmosphere as well as the metro and urban atmosphere. So we deal with projects that vary in degree from both sides of the spectrum. And in both cases, wetland can be a major contributor to delays in your project, difficulty finding wetlands. As you've heard from both representatives, it can be very difficult to find a wetland that meets the needs and the requirements of the wetlands that you may be impacting with those detrimental safety improvement projects. So again, I strongly support what's been shown before you today, and I'll take any questions at this time. Thank you.
Members, are there any questions? Any questions for the testifier? Seeing none, is there any further discussion to the bill as amended? Would you like to close, Chair Sundin?
Certainly, thank you, Chair Hansen. This is a very necessary piece of legislation to funding the program, and there's a widespread support, as we've seen through from the counties and also the Minnesota Building Trades. This is a critical link into moving the road construction forward throughout the state. Thank you for your consideration, and urge the committee to support it.
I will renew my motion that House File 2854, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Capital Investment Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Hansen?
Aye.
Chair Hansen votes aye. Vice Chair Wasilek?
Aye.
Wasilek votes aye. Lead Heinzman?
Aye.
Heinzman votes aye. Representative Acomb?
Aye.
Acomb votes aye. Representative Ackland?
Aye.
Ackland votes aye. Representative Backer?
Aye.
Backer votes aye. Representative Becker Finn?
Aye.
Becker Finn votes aye. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund votes aye. Representative Fisher?
Fisher votes aye.
Fisher aye. Representative Igo?
Igo aye.
Igo votes aye. Representative Jordan?
Jordan aye.
Jordan votes aye. Representative Keeler?
Keeler aye.
Keeler votes aye. Representative Lee?
Lee aye.
Lee votes aye. Representative Lippert?
Lippert aye.
Lippert votes aye. Representative Lewick?
Lewick votes aye.
Lewick aye. Representative Morrison?
Morrison aye.
Morrison votes aye. Representative Nelson?
Nelson votes aye.
Nelson aye. Representative Tice?
Tice aye.
Tice votes aye. The vote is 18 aye, 0 nay.
Thank you, members. The motion prevails. Next up, I have a bill, so I'll be turning the puck over to Vice Chair Wasilek.
All right, next on the agenda is House File 2719. Rep. Hansen, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, but first I need to, as I did last year with a similar bill on Conservation Reserve, I do have property that is enrolled in the Conservation Reserve program, and just want to make sure that I give that notice. It is a mid-contract and it's not my intent. If this bill was passed into law, I would not apply for the incentive. So before I move the bill, I wanted to make sure that was on the record. I move that House File 2719 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
And Representative Hansen, I believe you have an author's amendment. Would you briefly explain that amendment for us?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The author's amendment is similar to House File 171 that we heard last year. It makes changes to two easement stewardship accounts used by the Board of Water and Soil Resources. This amendment is a result of conversations between House fiscal staff, Minnesota Management and Budget, and Bowser to clarify the easement stewardship accounts and their uses. So it is a germane amendment relating to conservation, and so I'm asking for your support for the amendment.
Representative Hansen moves the A2 amendment to get the bill in the form the author wants. All those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. Next up, we have a couple of testifiers for the bill. First on the list, I have Will Clayton. You can introduce yourself for the record and then present your testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, my name is Will Clayton. I'm a senior regional representative with Pheasants Forever. And on behalf of the organization, I'm happy to express our support for HF 2719, Conservation Reserve Program Incentives. As I mentioned in my day job, I'm a senior field rep with PF, so I serve our extensive chapter network, a dedicated conservationist, as well as 20,000 plus paying members here in Minnesota. I started my career as a farm bill biologist in Swift County, where I worked extensively with willing landowners to identify areas that may be eligible for CRP. I wrote hundreds of contracts and likely enrolled and re-enrolled thousands of acres. Each project was different. Each landowner made the decision to enroll for different reasons. It's also worth noting that I'm privileged enough to own a small farm with my uncle. We have roughly 50 acres enrolled in CRP as well. It's been in my family for many years. I actually credit the CRP program and this farm in particular for setting me on a path to conservation. The benefits of CRP are well established, and I like that this bill is focusing on the continuous enrollment period and mentions conservation easement. Continuous CRP practices tend to focus on areas of greatest resource concern. They generally target marginal and underproducing areas like wetlands, floodplain areas, or acres of highest soil erosion. So continuous practices include filter strips and riparian buffers that produce, that provide a cushion between crop fields, adjacent rivers, ditches, water sources. Native grasses are often planted on these buffers, and these grasses have deep root systems that help stabilize banks during more frequent periods of high water. The continuous practice CRP wetlands, both floodplain and non-floodplain, restore some of our prairie pothole wetlands and the adjacent upland areas. These sites store water on the landscape, filling once drained wetlands that now can be used by migratory waterfowl, shorebirds, other wetland critters. And the adjacent uplands are planted, or often planted, I guess, to a diverse mix of native species. And these also have deep root systems that help keep soil in place and sequester carbon. And just a couple more practices I wanted to touch on is the CRP Safe and Pollinator programs. These programs bump up the seeding standard, and they require a more diverse mix of native grasses and forbs. Diversity of the seed mix often creates diversity of the wildlife using the site. And pollinators are critical to our food system, and incentivizing the establishment of their habitat is a good idea. It's also well known that these areas can produce a few pheasants, which the dog sleeping behind me certainly wouldn't be upset about. But my point is that these are good practices for Minnesota. We have ongoing issues with water quality, water storage, soil erosion, climate change, and planting native grasses and forbs helps mitigate all of that. If an added state of a state incentive is the tipping point between a large restored wetland along the Minnesota River and not, I'm in favor of adding that extra incentive. And I've seen firsthand the decision landowners make when thinking about CRP. The soil rental rate and the cost of installation is almost always the tipping point between enrolling or not. It's economics for producers. Look, since 2005, 400,000 acres have transferred out of CRP in Minnesota. Right now, there's only so many acres available. CRP is capped by the federal farm bill. And when you're capped, you're capped. I'm a little biased, of course, but I want Minnesota to enroll as many of those capped acres as we have demand for. And adding a state incentive to the program can certainly help us do that. So, in closing, Chair and members, I appreciate the opportunity to share my thoughts, Pheasants Forever's support for HF 2719 and the Conservation Reserve Program State Incentive. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Dave Wierens. Apologies if I'm saying your last name wrong. If you could introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, for record, my name is David Wierens. I'm Assistant Director with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. I'm here primarily to answer and respond to questions that the committee may have. The bill, of course, would have Bowser be responsible for implementing the provisions of this bill. I think the last thing I would say is that we certainly do have other existing programs where targeting expiring CRP is something that we routinely do. So in the statement of the bill is what this intended to do is work that we are already doing through other initiatives and authorities and appropriations that we have. So with that, I'd be happy to respond to any questions regarding the bill or the amendment that the committee may have.
Any member questions?
Vice Chair Wozlik.
Mm-hmm. Representative Hansen.
Just to walk through the bill, so to get it on the record, if members want to take a look at it, it's $5 million in fiscal year 2023 from the general fund. You may remember last year we had some discussion of a similar program using a different account. This would use the surplus money to provide one-time state incentive payments to enrollees in the Federal Conservation Reserve Program. So what that does is, let's say a landowner goes in, meets with the federal agencies, the Natural Resources Conservation Service, and as the testifiers mentioned, maybe they're on the fence that the rental rate is not as high as what could be achieved by planting something else. So the dollars are there, that they're looking at what's the cost of implementation. And the Federal Farm Service Agency provided some very good handouts that are posted on the committee website. You'll notice that the federal government provides a 50% cost share for establishments. So having that diverse mix of seeds can be very expensive, but it does produce results in a diverse mixture of critters that are there in the CRP. So if you look at the bill, it gives Bowser that authority to establish payment rates based on the land values or the environmental benefits criteria, including but not limited to surface water, groundwater pollution reduction, drinking water protection, soil health, pollinator and wildlife habitat, or other conservation enhancements. So landowner comes in, meets with the federal government folks on the fence, and if this program was in place, the Soil and Water Conservation District, the state, local staff could be there to provide dollars, and that the Board of Water and Soil Resources, through a public process, can set that rate. They would consult with the commissioners of agriculture, health, natural resources, PCA, and USDA in establishing program criteria. So it's a one-time appropriation. It would be available through June 30th, 2026. My intent in this is to try to get conservation implemented. So we know that land rental rates are going higher. There is currently a federal CRP enrollment going on right now, but as the testifier mentioned, the continuous CRP enrollment, which really targets environmentally sensitive areas, that's ongoing. So implementing this program would be timely and effective.
I see Representative Heinzman has a question. Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just like a clarification from the bill author. If this language in the bill and in the A2 would apply to current enrollees or new signups or both. So who are we specifically targeting here? And I'm hoping that everyone would be able to access this.
Representative Hansen?
My intent is those signing up. So if you are already into a contract, you've already locked into that contract. So there are contracts that are going to be expiring at the end of the federal fiscal year on September 30th. So my intent here is for those contract landowners that have their CRP expiring, or if they had land they'd like to enroll new now, either in the continuous or in the general sign-up program. I don't know if that helps.
Representative Heinzman, any follow-up on that?
Maybe another clarification, Madam Chair. Is there any reason why we wouldn't allow everyone to look towards participating regardless of whether they're a new sign up or transitioning? Maybe there's an obvious reason. Just wanted to see if I could get that clarification.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Heinzman. It's my belief they've already signed the contract. They've already made the decision based on the rental rate that was there. They've already implemented the program.
Representative Heinzman, did you have anything else?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just comment and say it could be something we need to look at, and maybe we'll talk about it as we continue this conversation.
Any other questions? Not seeing any hands popping up here. Representative Hansen, did you have any closing remarks you wanted to make?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'd ask for your support for this. We did have a similar discussion last year, but I think now is the time with federal dollars. And I did not mention earlier carbon sequestration, but having long-term carbon storage by a 10 or 15-year contract and with CRP, one of the practices you can use are planting trees. So I think rather than recreating the wheel, we're incentivizing an existing program to try to get conservation practices for a multiple benefits to be implemented. So I'd ask for your support, and I would renew my motion to lay House File 2719 over for possible inclusion, as amended.
Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 2719, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The Madam bill Chair. Is, yep, Representative Hansen.
I sincerely apologize, but as I'm going through the A2 and listening to the responses from the chair, and this is highly unusual to ask, but I am going to anyway. I'm struggling still with the A2, and it's not, maybe it's, maybe there could be some clarification as what the A2 is doing. I'm not totally clear on that, and what is the reasoning behind it? And I know we're just about to vote, but maybe the bill author could allow us a few extra moments.
Representative Hansen.
Sure, and that, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Heinzman, no problem. If Mr. Wirens could walk through this amendment.
Mr. Wirens.
Mr. Chair and Representative Heinzman would be happy to walk through the amendment and what our intentions are. This is an administration bill that the board has brought forward, and we appreciate the efforts of Representative Hansen to bring this forward. Before walking through detail, just briefly, what the purpose of the bill is to amend some existing statute that provides a mechanism for Bowser to set aside revenues in a long-term fund. So we have financial resources to oversee the easements that we are responsible for overseeing on behalf of the state under the Wetland Banking Program that falls under the Wetland Conservation Act, as well as under the University of Minnesota program. Where combined, the board has responsibility for over 300,000 acres of easements. In many of those, we have sites where wetlands have been restored, where water is being managed. The current language provides funding for us to do some of our more administrative oversight, to check for boundaries, to enforce it that might be necessary, to provide funding to SWCDs, to do monitoring of the sites, to make sure that there's no encroachments, to work with landowners if there are any concerns about the sites. That's been in place for several years for both types of our easement programs. The amended language is broadening the use of the funds that we are setting aside on an ongoing basis. The purpose being is that over time, structures get old and need maintenance, and we need to have the resources to go in and take care of those to ensure really two fundamental things. To make sure that the water is not moving onto neighboring property and causing damages, and also to keep the water where it was intended to be so that we're getting the environmental benefits of restored areas. So what the bill is doing with that brief backdrop of the purpose is we currently receive 5% of the corpus, of the fund that's being managed by the State Board of Investment that kind of pays for our existing activities associated with oversight, monitoring, enforcement. What we're asking for is some additional authority to access those funds when we have maintenance and repair needs. Again, if due to heavy rainfall, water control structures have been damaged, or you have trees that are undermining embankments, again, things happen on the site. We need the resource to do so. It creates a mechanism for us to access these funds that are in this set aside fund so that we can make plans to do repairs, again, to prevent damages to neighbors and to maintain the environmental benefits of sites. And the way it is structured is it gives us flexibility in how much we ask for, because we only want to take as much as we need to solve problems we know about so that the money stays in the account, earns the rate of return, so that we have the long-term resources to maintain these wetland sites. Because these easements we have are into perpetuity, so the funds we set aside now need to be there in 50, 100, 1,000 years, because the state's rights will retain off in the future. So that's the intent behind the language and structure how it's going to work. I'd also point out that when we do access money for these additional repair and maintenance purposes, we are required to provide reporting as well, so that to be transparency and communication to the legislature, so you know what we are doing with this authority going on in the future, so that again, if we need to come back in front of the committee and discuss what we're doing, we'd be able to do that because we'd have full information provided to you. So I hope that helps, Representative Heintz. Being happy to respond further if you have more questions.
Representative Heintz, any follow-up?
No, I would just suggest that we get a rundown of what each of these, well, the bill itself and then also the amendment does before we go to the vote. And I should have said something earlier, so I'm just trying to catch up and make sure we're fully briefed on what we're actually voting on. Thank you.
Representative Hansen, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, after last year, and I did note that House File 171 was before the committee last session, that there continue to be discussions between nonpartisan fiscal staff, MMB, and Bowser, trying to clarify the language. This ongoing easement question has been vexing us for a long time. I should note that with the short session and with the backlog with the revisers, we may be adding things via amendment, Representative Heintzman. So rather than having a reintroduction of another bill, which may take significant time, if that bill has been out there before and we have the opportunity to include it in something that's going to be held over for possible inclusion, we are probably going to, this will not be the last of amendments that we're going to be seeing to bills. So that we wanted to get it in front of the committee and have the support for that. So I believe Mr. Wyrens has a comment as well.
Yep, I see Mr. Wyrens' hand up.
Yes, thank you very much for recognizing me. Just a couple of other comments, and either myself or others from Bowers are happy to visit with Representative Heintzman to further discuss with him if he's interested. But a couple more points I think are helpful to understand why we're asking for this language. It's the circumstances where there's a situation on the ground that we can't await another year for an appropriation. There's an urgent matter. We need to either prevent damage to neighboring landowners, or we want to maintain the benefits, and we want to make sure it's less costly. Sometimes if you wait longer, the cost gets more expensive to do repairs. So we do it more quickly by having resources available. You know, we can save these public resources. So those are some of the reasons for the nature of this is being able to respond as timely as possible so that the neighbors aren't upset with the state and that we save the public resources by reacting as promptly as we can. So I appreciate the opportunity to just some additional follow-up comments just to further explain some of the other issues that we do experience out there and have struggled in the past to respond to.
Representative Heintzman, did you have anything? I see you.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. No, I understand the bill's being laid over. We're just moving on.
Yep. Sounds good. Okay, I'm just going to back up a step since we didn't get through the laying over part exactly. Representative Hansen has renewed his motion that House File 2719, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. I will turn the virtual gavel back over to Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Vice Chair Wozlik. Next up, we have Representative Torkelson's House File 2162, County Boards Allowed to Spend Tax Forfeited Land. Representative Heintzman, would you like to move Representative Torkelson's bill?
Yes, I would move 2162, Mr. Chair.
Representative Heintzman moves House File 2162 to be recommended to be re-referred to the State Government Finance and Elections Committee. Representative Torkelson, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Am I coming across the web okay?
You're doing good.
Excellent. Well, first of all, thank you for hearing this bill. I'm very pleased to have it on your agenda today. House File 2162 addresses an issue that counties are experiencing across the state, increasing expenses associated with the cleanup of tax forfeited properties. When taxes go on unpaid on a property in Minnesota, the land is turned over to the state and held in trust for the taxing subdivisions. However, the administration of these properties resides with the county boards and county auditors and treasurers or land commissioners when appointed. The tax forfeited property program charges the counties with returning the property to its best and highest use, whether that is returning it to a productive taxable property or to public use. These properties range from residential to business, old school buildings to properties used as dump sites. The cost to clean up and manage these sites can be significant. but there are few resources to help fund the work or mechanisms to recoup the county funds invested in the cleanup. The proposal before you today will help mitigate some of the financial burdens and support more active attention to the properties in the program by allowing a county board to pass a resolution to hold funds from the sale of a tax forfeit property to address the cleanup and maintenance costs under the program. I have two testifiers joining us today to tell you more about the problem and this proposal. From my county, from one of my counties, Brown County, the auditor treasurer, Kelly Hodebeck, and Jeff Strand from Hennepin County to explain some of the details of the program. I just emphasize this is a voluntary program. It's not a requirement for the counties, but it's another option they can utilize. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson, Kelly Hodebeck, Brown County Auditor Treasurer. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Chair Hansen and committee members. I'm Kelly Hodebeck, the Brown County Auditor Treasurer, and I'm also speaking today on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties, a membership organization representing all 87 counties. So thank you for hearing House File 2162 and for the opportunity to testify. By statute, counties are obligated to manage our tax forfeited properties with the goal of restoring it to its best use. The cost to clean up and manage these properties are borne to the counties. Through the years, we're seeing growing costs due to property numbers, the size of structures, and extensive needs for remediation. While some state and federal cleanup programs exist, they often are focused or restrictive in ways that limit access for these purposes. So counties find that most of the cleanup and remediation projects on tax forfeited properties do not qualify. This forces counties to make difficult decisions about accessing other county funds or leaving properties unaddressed until resources do become available. Heading into last session, AMC surveyed our members to learn more about the challenges that these counties experienced with these properties. For the members of this committee, more than 15 of the counties you represent responded and reported dealing with tax forfeited properties and that those costs are rarely recovered. Ramsey County had addressed nearly 70 sites and failed to recover as much as $160,000 on one site. Crow Wing County has completed 9 major demo projects and hundreds of small cleanups. However, they cited 12 structures in one city where they were unable to address due to the cost. Dakota County commented that there is not enough clarity in law as to how counties can use funds for remediation of forfeited lands. Inadequate apportioned funding has prevented counties from being able to perform remediation of these hazardous properties. In Brown County, tax forfeited sites are often blighted, with some properties being beyond repair. George's Ballroom in New Ulm is a vacant building, approximately 35,000 square feet, that occupies 6 city lots, with demolition and remediation costs estimated at $1.2 to $1.4 million back in 2020. The high costs of remediation and demolition restrict how quickly these properties are cleaned up, auctioned off, and returned to tax rolls. When properties can be sold back into private ownership, the revenue is distributed according to the statute, which requires payment for certain public investments and special assessments, as well as several permissive allowances before the remaining funds finally get distributed to local taxing districts, counties, cities, towns, and school districts. While all the local jurisdictions benefit from the sale proceeds and reestablishing the property as a taxable asset, not everyone contributes to the costs associated with addressing these properties. This proposal would permit a county by resolution to create an account to use these revenues for cleanup and maintenance efforts on the tax forfeited property. These revenues do not amount to a great deal of money and in many cases still fall short of covering the costs, but it will greatly help. So while this will not be the solution to financial obstacles of addressing large sites and those that require extensive remediation and demolition, It does move us forward and will help counties address the costs of cleanup activities, ensuring these lands will be safe and productive for the future. We would appreciate your support and thank you for your time.
We'll do questions after the next testifier. Jeff Strand, Hennepin County.
Good afternoon, Chair, Representative Hansen, Vice Chair, and committee members. My name is Jeffrey Strand. I'm a senior administrative manager with Hennepin County, participating remotely on behalf of the Minnesota Association of County Officers, MACO, and the Minnesota Association of County Auditors, Treasurers, and Finance Officers, MCATFO, to testify in support of House File 2162 and to assist with any technical questions. And I have approval from our Intergovernmental Relations Department to assist today. I'm the co-lead co-chair of the MCATFO Statewide Delinquency and Tax Forfeiture Committee with Ramsey County Auditor Treasurer Heather Bessler. Our committee has representation from over 20 counties plus Minnesota Revenue. This item was approved as a tier one priority for 2022 recommendation to the MACO Legislative Committee. This item that would authorize a set aside from the annual tax forfeit land net settlement under Minnesota statute section 282.08 to provide environmental cleanup related funding for contaminated tax forfeit sites has been a platform item supported by this committee that I co-chair from 2018 to 2022. I would say that I take the long view in this matter, having 35 years plus involvement in tax forfeit administration of 8 tax forfeit Minnesota Superfund sites, along with many petroleum or tank impacted sites in Hennepin County. I would state that this type of funding is critical. The Hennepin County Board of Commissioners recognized this issue and created a contaminated lands restoration program as far back as 1996. However, a current day example, which I believe is in Representative Jordan's district or adjacent thereto, is a former universal plating site, which was an abandoned industrial facility that went tax forfeit in 2015. At that time, the property was not scheduled for any action, but it was listed with the state Superfund, the Minnesota Permanent List of Priorities. Because the property was open and was an attractive nuisance for youth in the community, is situated near Edison High School and a residential community, Hennepin County decided to proceed proactively with characterization and abatement and remediation of abandoned waste on the site. So in order to, there were no state funds available, but in order to reduce hazards and jumpstart the process, Hennepin County has expended over $750,000 to characterize and properly dispose of abandoned hazardous waste and to demolish dilapidated and hazardous structures. $500,000 of that funding has come from the forfeited tax sale fund, and $250,000 came from a county board approved environmental response fund grant. So the site was a electroplating facility from 1944 to 2009. And as I said, it was abandoned with hazardous waste on site. And so in my work as co-chair of the MCATFO committee, I get typically weekly calls from other auditor treasurers in Minnesota dealing with everything from abandoned ethanol plants, say in Renville County, to other issues, as Auditor Hadovec explained in great detail. So I would urge you to support this and put this line item in the waterfall of the net settlement of tax forfeit proceeds for the discretion of the county board. And I thank Representative Torkelson for his authorship. Thank you.
Representative Torkelson, did you have any other testifiers?
I do not, Mr. Chair. I'd just point out to members the letter of support from the Minnesota Association of County Land Commissioners and a fact sheet from the Association of Minnesota Counties describing some of the issues around this bill.
Members, do you have any questions for the testifier or Representative Torkelson? Representative Heitzman.
Yeah, just One quick check question, Mr. Chair, if that's okay. It'd be nice if we could get just a real quick overview of the overall process of apportionment for the net proceeds to taxing districts. I think that's something that could be new that we might want to cover.
And if we could just wait, we do have someone else who signed up to testify, Representative Torkelson. Gregory Bernou, Carlton County Land Commissioner.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. My name is Greg Bernou. I'm the County Land Commissioner for Carlton County. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Association of County Land Commissioners. In your package today, you did receive a letter of support for this bill from the 15 counties that make up the association. We stretch from Pine County west to Becker, north to Lake of the Woods, and then east to Cook County, then down the shore. As the previous county administrators have stated, this is very important for us to have this funding source ranging or to knock down, clean up, mitigate these tax forfeited properties. It's very common for us to spend thousands of dollars to generate tens of dollars in revenue on the flip end. So it's a net loss for us to do it, but we do clean these up. It's incumbent upon us to do it. Some of those costs can go to lead, paint and mitigation, asbestos, other hazardous waste. Some of these properties have been old car dealerships, old white goods stores, dry cleaners, schools, just a multitude of small buildings in small cities. And as we see the migration of the population from our rural counties to the more metro counties, this even gets harder and harder to put these costs on the tax base if we have to. So having this funding source pre-apportionment is fantastic, and the County Land Commissioner's support 2162. And I can address the apportionment process unless Jeffrey or Kelly would prefer to do that.
We would like to take that. Mr. Bernou, why don't you go ahead since you volunteered?
I should know better than to volunteer. The funds are generated to the tax forfeiture fund through the sale of properties, minerals, leases, timber off of tax forfeited properties. This creates a gross amount that goes into a set aside fund that's under the guise of a county auditor. We are able to, under a statute, to take our operating expenses out of that gross, leaving a net value. That net then is apportioned out under statute. We can, depending on what county you are, you can put up to 30% into a timber development fund if you're a northern or southeastern county with a timber program. You can put up to 20% into a county park fund where that next 20% off the net goes dedicated to county parks and county park management. Then after that, if there's some special taxing districts, some counties do have an economic development fund where dollars go into up to a certain dollar value. Then the balance is split between the townships, the school district, and the county general fund. The townships could be villages too, based on where those dollars are generated. 40% of the leftover goes to the county general fund, 40% into the school district, and then 20% into the town or township or village in which those dollars were generated.
Representative Heintzman, did that help out?
Yes, it did. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Representative Torkelson, any or members, are there any other questions? Representative Torkelson, any closing comments?
Well, thank you again, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill. It seems like a common sense thing to do. You know, cleanup has gotten to be a major proposition for many of these properties. This will not fix all the problems or supply all the revenue necessary, but it's a step in the right direction. But we have broad support for the bill, Mr. Chair, and I urge you to send it on to the next committee. Thank you.
And Representative Torkelson, you'd be happy to get co-authors, is that correct?
Of course. It's all so easy these days electronic signature opportunities that we representatives have.
Representative Heintzman, would you like to renew your motion?
I will renew my motion, Mr. Chair.
Representative Heintzman renews his motion that House File 2162 be recommended to be re-referred to the State Government Finance and Elections Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Hansen?
Aye.
Chair Hansen votes aye. Vice Chair Wasilek?
Aye.
Wasilek votes aye. Lead Heinzman?
Aye.
Heinzman votes aye. Representative Acomb?
Aye.
Acomb votes aye. Representative Ackland?
Aye.
Ackland votes aye. Representative Backer?
Backer, aye.
Backer votes aye. Representative Becker-Finn?
Aye.
Becker-Finn votes aye. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund votes aye. Representative Fisher?
Fisher, aye.
Fisher votes aye. Representative Igo?
Igo, aye.
Igo votes aye. Representative Jordan?
Jordan, aye.
Jordan votes aye. Representative Keeler?
Keeler, aye.
Keeler votes aye. Representative Lee?
Lee, aye.
Lee votes aye. Representative Lippert?
Lippert, aye.
Lippert votes aye. Representative Lewick?
Lewick votes aye.
Lewick, aye. Representative Morrison?
Morrison, aye.
Morrison votes aye. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson votes aye. Representative Tice?
Tice, aye.
Tice votes aye. The final vote is 18 aye, 0 nay.
You're muted.
18-0, unanimous, the motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Next up, we have a presentation from the Minnesota Outdoor Recreation Task Force. Members may remember this bill from a couple years ago. Representative Dabney had a bill. The task force was created, and we have with us Laura Prius from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources to present from the Outdoor Recreation Task Force. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Laura Preuss. I'm the Statewide Programs and Planning Manager with the Division of Parks and Trails. And thank you for the opportunity to present a brief overview on the Outdoor Recreation Task Force today. As we all know, outdoor recreation is a huge benefit to the state of Minnesota for health, the health, well-being, and economy. The Outdoor Recreation Task Force was a collaborative effort from the DNR and Explore Minnesota to bring together a diverse group of 21 leaders in outdoor recreation in Minnesota. The task force was not a legislatively directed initiative, but was a partnership with DNR and Explore Minnesota, really to build support for outdoor recreation across many sectors. DNR and Explore Minnesota charged the group to consider the following: how to bring measured growth, increased and equitable access, and a higher quality of outdoor recreation opportunities to all Minnesotans and visitors, as well as how to organize and implement this collaborative work going forward. The Outdoor Recreation Task Force met virtually for about a year between 2020 and 21 and developed a set of recommendations that were based on their discussions as well as public input. And the task force report is included in your committee documents, and I'd really encourage you to take a look at that. These recommendations represent a significant accomplishment in terms of providing important insight about how to make outdoor recreation even better in Minnesota, knowing what a strong part of it is for Minnesota. The recommendations are focused around increasing participation, as well as uniting the outdoor recreation community. And they really focus on three major areas for action. And I'd like to highlight those three areas. First is to increase participation by advancing equity, diversity, and inclusivity. And the task force had a whole scope of conversations around how to build a culture of welcoming everyone outdoors and making sure that Minnesota is really known as a place where everyone is welcome outdoors. That could be very important for Minnesota. Secondly, a major action area that the task force reported included was to unite Minnesota's outdoor recreation community. There was really a recognition that outdoor recreation in all of its forms is a major part of Minnesota's quality of life and economy, and that by working together, we can make that outdoor recreation better for everyone. Third was around unifying communications among Minnesota's diverse outdoor recreation sectors. There's really an emphasis around building more cohesive messages about the importance and opportunities of outdoor recreation in Minnesota. Within each of these three areas I just described, there's a set of further, more specific, detailed recommendations, which you'll be able to find in that report. The task force also spent a lot of time discussing how can we work on advancing these recommendations, because there's really so many ways that you could achieve these actions. The task force discussed a number of different scenarios, and ultimately in the end of the report, the majority of task force members landed on the idea of creating an Office of Outdoor Recreation. One of the important takeaways from the task force process was the need to build on the connection really between public and nonprofit entities, for example, such as the DNR and outdoor recreation groups, as well as outdoor recreation industry. So there was a real emphasis on thinking broadly about partnerships. The task force spent time also highlighting the economic importance of outdoor recreation in Minnesota, acknowledging that sometimes it's surprising the extent to which outdoor recreation plays a role both in the state and national economy. And then importantly, the task force also recommended that existing agencies can already be making progress on these recommendations and key action areas. And DNR and Explore Minnesota recognize that there's more work to do, and we're committed on working with partners to achieve that. DNR would like to really explore all of the ways that we can accomplish these key action areas and recommendations. Another important topic to mention is that it's worth noting that many of these recommendations have some similarities or complementarity to other efforts. For example, the recommendations found in the 25-year Parks and Trails Legacy Plan. That really has an emphasis on coordinating among partners and advancing an integrated approach to outdoor recreation. There's a really nice success, I think, in demonstrating the partnerships that we've seen with Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission, the Metropolitan Council, as well as Department of Natural Resources in our integrated legacy work around outdoor recreation. So DNR is really interested in working together to support a more connected and inclusive outdoor recreation community. DNR is also putting a lot of emphasis on the action areas that were identified in the report. For example, around advancing equity, diversity, and inclusion. As a couple of examples in this past year, DNR, in its efforts to put more energy in those areas, we've launched a library pass where library patrons have the ability to check out a free state parks library pass in 71 libraries around the state. The purpose is to really give free access and opportunities for people who may not normally have the opportunity or be trying those types of outdoor recreation opportunities. So far, there's been more than 1,500 checkouts of those free passes. So that's just one example of the types of ways that we're trying to broaden our outreach. We're also doing new statewide interpretive programs that are focusing on advancing inclusive approaches to interpretation throughout the state, working with tribal communities and others to really advance a variety of ways that we're expanding inclusivity of our interpretation. And then finally, in addition, we'd like to note that DNR's future funding for the outdoors initiative is also a clear connection to the task force recommendations, where that's really an effort to, in collaboration with Minnesota, with all Minnesotans, explore new frameworks to ensure that we have funding and can serve new, returning, and long-time outdoor recreation enthusiasts and sustainably manage our natural resources for generations to come. So in sum, I've given you an overview of the key action areas, the broad recommendation. You can really encourage you to look at those reports in more detail. It was a great group who really wanted to bring people together to focus on outdoor recreation in Minnesota. Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to present on this today, and I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you, and we do have a couple questions. So Representative Eklund and then Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Bruce, I think I got your name right. But anyway, are we going to see a bill from the administration that's going to fund this office, and are we going to, has a location been picked? If or when we're going to fund this office and get it started.
Ms. Pruitt.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the question. That's something where, as we were discussing sort of the different ways that we could approach this, some of these are things that the agency might already be working on, but how can we further advance them? So it seems that there's an acknowledgement too of the partnerships conversations could maybe mature a little bit more, the specific details of this type of an effort. So at this time, there's not a bill coming forward, but DNR is committed to working with our partners to explore what are all the best ways to achieve these actions.
Representative Eklund.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Bruce. I appreciate that. I would recommend with the number of agency employees that are in St. Paul that if we actually come through with an idea to fund this, that we take a look at citing this office somewhere other than St. Paul, preferably greater Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Eklund, it seems like I can see a thought bubble over your head that says up north somewhere. Is that right? Or am I imagining that?
Mr. Chair, I kind of represent what a big part of the playground of the state of Minnesota, so I'd certainly like to see that office up north somewhere.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious to hear a little bit about what the task force found in terms of jobs and our outdoor recreation economy. I know OIA has found that states that have these offices of outdoor recreation see increased investments in jobs. Like I think I've seen Colorado and Michigan used as examples that have these departments. And it's had a good influence on jobs and incomes associated with the outdoor industry. Has this task force looked into it, into the effect that outdoor recreation has on a diversified Minnesota economy and what job opportunities this presents for those of us from northeastern Minneapolis to northeastern Minnesota?
Ms. Press.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Great questions. They really did spend a lot of time on emphasizing the importance. And in fact, a number of the task force members represented different forms of industry, whether that was water recreation, marine, whether it was camping, RVs, you know, Girl Scouts. It was just the range of members on the task force. And so they did spend quite a bit of time discussing the idea that we could grow jobs and grow opportunities, and also try to do that more equitably was also a significant focus, that there may be opportunities that aren't being fully realized right now in terms of how industries are connecting with all Minnesotans. And so there was an acknowledgement of the importance and opportunities around that. As it related to the other states examples, there was a presentation about other states that are doing these types of offices. And really there's sort of a variety of types of offices. There's about, I think, about 14 of them. So not all states have them, just some of them do. And they're sort of at different points in their maturity. And so it's sometimes hard to know how much is it related to the office versus other types of activities that are in the state. What are sort of some of the pros and cons of the offices? And so they were trying to understand and look at that. And it's not an entirely clear picture across the nation. And so it was, you know, but they were trying to learn from examples of other states as well. Thank you.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for that answer. What were some of the, you said that there was a discussion around jobs and the economy. What were some of the findings that this task force determined as a result of this? I didn't notice as much attention to this in the report we were supplied.
Ms. Press.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I think part of that may be that one of the things that this task force focused on is, you know, where might we have gaps in information or where might there be opportunities to learn more? And so they themselves didn't delve into the specific economic numbers, but rather acknowledged that there was an opportunity to better understand the importance of outdoor recreation in the state. There's also a number of agencies that currently do gather some of that information. You know, DEED does a number of that work. We also have within Department of Natural Resources, we do a lot of research. For example, we have a State Parks Visitor Survey coming up in this coming summer, where we look at and examine the importance of that daily spending for state park visitors, and we get some economic estimates. And so we have a lot of that information currently within different agencies and within the DNR as well.
I'm Jordan, follow up.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that answer. I do hope that we can see more research here. And also, I think when we're thinking about the effects of tourism and outdoor recreation have on surrounding communities, you know, I represent a very urban district in Northeast Minneapolis, but we do have a lot of outdoor recreation opportunities along the Mississippi River, and thinking about the economic value of, you know, the river in addition to our businesses and restaurants is something that I would like to see studied. I think also just You know, when I have people come from out of town, I always, if we're able, I try to take them to the, you know, the Boundary Waters, or maybe even like Pipestone National Monument as some of our great treasures here and our crown jewels of Minnesota. So making sure that we're thinking about some of the economic resources as well and the effects that having these sorts of natural treasures in our state bring to us is something I'd like to see more developed.
Members, any other questions? Any other questions? I do think Representative Davney is working on something. I'm hoping that people are involved in that. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question that maybe the presenter could address. I'm going to go back a little bit to some of the challenges that we hear coming. And for example, former chair of this committee would often talk about that some of the financing challenges that are facing DNR in its management of the outdoors and a lot of the public lands across the state of Minnesota, very specifically cross-country ski trails, people buying passes and not even being able to access trails in their own backyard because the agency was struggling to find some of the solutions to the challenges by putting dollars into those trail systems. And I could cite literally dozens of examples where people are going into the outdoors, they're accessing Minnesota's natural resources, as Representative Jordan was just mentioning. They're out there, but finding them quite often in disrepair or poorly managed. Did the committee come up with any solutions that wouldn't take dollars out of what would otherwise potentially be maybe available for enhancements and maintenance? It seems like so often some of the targeted ideas that are being described are expensive. And in some cases, it seems as though there's quite often, as a part of the solution, a removal of any of the costs and fees that all go towards the maintenance of those properties and the issues that I just mentioned. That's something I struggle with, and I have concern that it would unfortunately contribute to some of the ongoing issues as opposed to draw people that are really needing to be able to have help to access and understand how great Minnesota's opportunities are and be discouraged by what they see, right? And be disappointed. I don't want an opportunity like this to pass by only to potentially disappoint people in their experience. So I hope that was part of the discussion, because we do need to find ways to make sure that we're enhancing those things. And that would also be a draw to people from any part of the state of Minnesota.
Ms. Perez, response?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the integration of many points that you brought together there. And I think there was some discussion around this, and there's a lot of ideas packed in that. One is, if we're going to be having a welcoming community and welcome outdoors for everyone, they need to be in good condition. Someone isn't going to feel welcome if they're arriving at a place that isn't well kept and doesn't provide a really welcoming opportunity. And there are challenges when we think about rehabilitating or maintaining the extent of outdoor recreation opportunities we have in the state of Minnesota. We want to be a world-class place to come. And so that requires the investment to maintain these outdoor recreation opportunities. And in fact, DNR in our future funding initiative is really trying to explore some of these questions that you bring up about how can we collaborate with Minnesotans to ensure that we have funding frameworks that allow us to sustain excellent places that are open and welcoming to everyone. As it relates to the Outdoor Recreation Task Force discussion of these topics, I think that there was maybe not a conversation as much about policies or the specifics of the funding for specific types of outdoor recreation. But I think there was a general acknowledgement that they were hoping to grow the pie rather than compete the pie, if I may say. The idea that they really wanted to elevate the importance of outdoor recreation in Minnesota, knowing how important it is, in the hopes that it would continue to receive secure and solid funding into the future. So I'm not sure if that fully gets at your question, but there is that understanding of we want to have high quality opportunities, and it does take funding to achieve that.
Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. Yeah, quite honestly, it doesn't necessarily address the concern that I have, as I really would love to see more people accessing the great outdoors in Minnesota, while at the same time, the dollars have to be there to maintain that. And if they aren't, then even trying to entice people with, frankly, tax dollars may be counterproductive. And I wouldn't want that. I don't think anybody on this committee would want it to be a counterproductive effort. So hopefully that's something that the task force can look at more closely.
Members, any other questions? Thank you. Just a little bit of foreshadowing for the week. Thursday will be PFAS day and some MLCAT activity. Looking ahead to next Tuesday, we're still kind of working on the agenda there, anticipating that's probably redistricting day. So we're trying to make sure we get a schedule ready for there and the following Thursday. So just watch your calendar, and we hope to have information available from testimony. I think it was great today to have some of these context and comments that are there. I should note, you know, I think we have a great opportunity in front of us this year with unprecedented amount of a budget surplus. So both in terms of capital expenditures, but also operations and maintenance, we can do the things that Representative Heinzman talked about, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Chair Lee's committee will be doing a robust bonding bill where we can kind of close the gaps on some of the trails and make sure that we are having a great system. But also the general fund is here, and we could update and improve many of these outdoor facilities that will be available for Minnesotans for generations to come. When you go to many of our state parks, you will find an old WPA plaque or an old CCC plaque that were there from the investments that were made in the 1930s. And that is the type of legacy with a small L that is in front of us, if we only see it and if we choose to implement it. So as we go on this journey here in the next few weeks, I ask for your support to keep our eyes open and look at what we can do, not only for ourselves, but for those in the future. With that, we are adjourned.